Just moments after Judge Vincent Gaughan passed sentence in the Laquan McDonald murder case, the snow began to fall over Chicago. The sound of a snowstorm muffled so many noises, but this one muffled the most important thing of all. The sound of Chicago walking away. The politicians walked away, the mayor walked away, the aldermen, Rahm's top cops. At the time, when Laquan McDonald was killed with 16 shots fired from the gun of a white police officer, Jason Van Dyke, and police said it was justified, they all walked away. You couldn't hear them walk in all that snow. The snow fell upon Chicago, and it fell upon the place where the black teenager was killed with those 16 shots pumped into his body. And the snow kept falling miles and miles to the west in the cemetery and Forest Park, settling on the bare trees and the shrubs and upon the gravestone that marks McDonald's resting place. Because he's cold in the ground and he can't walk away. Beloved son and brother, Laquan J. McDonald, it says. But was he really, truly beloved? He grew up angry, the child of a drug addict. He was high on PCP when officers told him to drop the knife, and he didn't. But 16 shots? All those rounds penetrating the twitching body again and again as he lay there on the ground? So you could argue that police officer Jason Van Dyke gets to walk. 3.5 years is a long time for a white cop in a state prison. An eternity is a week for any cop, and he'll be a target. But only 3.5 years, that's it? Van Dyke should have no complaints. You could say the three officers who lied about it all got to walk. They were charged with obstruction and conspiracy. They lied in police reports about the shooting and said it was justified. But Cook County Judge Domenica Stevenson rejected the prosecution case, so they walked too. And who else walked? Those Chicago aldermen who approved the $5 million settlement and hush money to Laquan. They did so as a favor to Rahm. And the others who walked? The former top cops who were in charge. From former police superintendent Gary McCarthy. Okay, he was fired, but he gets to run for mayor. He still hasn't had to really explain his relationship with the knock-around guy Ricky Simon. What kind of punishment is that, really? Oh, one more guy gets to walk. Mayor Rahm Emanuel. He sat on the police shooting video until after his re-election was safe. And though he can't be mayor, he had to quit the race because of what he'd done. And I kept mentioning it time and time again. You know what bothered me, though? He still had the gall to talk about the police code of silence in 2015, back when he was desperately spinning to keep his job.
As we move forward, I am looking for a new leader of the Chicago Police Department to address the problems at the very heart of the policing profession. The problem is sometimes referred to as the thin blue line. The problem is other times referred to as the code of silence. It is this tendency to ignore. It is a tendency to deny. It is a tendency in some cases to cover up the bad actions of a colleague or colleagues. No officer should be allowed to behave as if they are above the law just because they are responsible for upholding the law. Permitting and protecting even the smallest acts of abuse by a tiny fraction of our officers leads to a culture where extreme acts of abuse are more likely, just like what happened to Laquan McDonald. We have all grieved over young lives lost again and again to senseless violence in our city. Now more than ever, we need good and effective policing. We cannot have effective policing if we turn a blind eye to extreme misconduct as we saw its worst in the tragic case of Laquan McDonald. We cannot ask citizens in crime-ravaged neighborhoods to break the code of silence if we continue to allow a code of silence to exist within our own police department. We cannot ask young men to respect officers if officers do not respect them in kind. Respect must be earned. Respect is a two-way street.
You're a one-way street, Mayor Rahm Emanuel. You and Rich Daley before you, and if you get your way on picking the next mayor of Chicago with your minions hanging all over Susana Mendoza, and she'll be a one-way street too. Jeff Carlin is here from WGN's Rokon Show with Anna DeVellantis, my friend and Mr. Science. And I'm John Cass, husband, father, nationally syndicated columnist for the Chicago Tribune, who stayed up too late the other night watching a bad movie with Sandra Bullock that scared the crap out of me. And you're on the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
So, Jeff Carlin, you know what people have to do? They have to find us on iTunes. They have to write us a kick-ass review. They have to tell their friends to subscribe to the Chicago Way. You know why? Because we like doing it. And we're podcasting here behind the iron blue curtain of Mike Madigan, J.B. Pritzker pressing his way down upon us, Rahm Emanuel trying to finagle his way to get Susana Mendoza into City Hall, Tony Preckwinkle scrambling, Dorothy Brown having the goat meat. I don't know how to make sense of it all, Jeff Carlin.
Well, but you seem to.
If it weren't for you, my friend, I don't know, I'd lose my mind.
I think we'd all lose our mind. I think the city's already lost its mind, but that's just me.
So how does this go with, if you're a cop, do you ever get out of your car anymore?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, you're talking about the Van Dyke piece?
Yeah, I'm talking about the Van Dyke piece. Do you even want to become a cop in Chicago?
I mean, after seeing that, that's tough. And after everything that went down there, you got to think that now there's a hesitation. But then, should there be a hesitation? I mean, you've got to think,
or
no.
Or should there be a hesitation because you've got the power of life and death. And you're basically the arm of the government, the muscle of the state.
Right.
So should you be held accountable? Yes. But still, there's a human element to it all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're especially, I don't know, race has something to play into it, too.
Yeah, I mean, it does.
Not
but it,
for the situation on the street.
No,
but I don't.
It does in that it's a broad overlying, that stigma that kind of hangs about the relations between cops and.
Jeff Carlin, police officer, white guy, shoots a black kid. It doesn't matter what the facts are, really. Sometimes political actors will stretch it into what they want
to see. What they want to see.
Right?
Yeah.
And your life gets ruined or not, or you should be scrutinized. John Cass pulls a weapon. I'm a police officer. I pull a weapon. It should be scrutinized. I get all that. But there's something to it that, I don't know, there's so much politics involved. There's so much of it. And all the agendas that everyone brings with it, right? I was listening to the mayoral candidates the other day. I was at the Tribune editorial board endorsement session. There were three of them last week. And what I noticed was that every candidate pushed their own agenda as they were reacting to the acquittal of the three cops who allegedly played games on the, reporting of the shooting. Everybody came to it with their own perspective, but it's another way of saying they pushed their own agenda. And Laquan McDonald, has his agenda, but he's dead. The police officer, Jason Van Dyke, he'll be in prison. I mean, everyone's pushing it's like a game to everybody. Rahm Emanuel with his code of silence BS.
Right. And it's and the tragedy of all, and I've said this before, but the tragedy of all of this, it's all the different little pieces of things of looking at the code of silence and looking at Van Dyke and looking at Rahm and covering up the video and all.
Yeah,
it's tiddlywinks in a tornado. I mean, because the situation in the city that precipitated all of this, all of it, top to bottom, has been the fault of greedy politicians lining their pockets, extorting businesses and taking from the people. And I say that because, I mean, look at Laquan, a kid who grew up and is fell apart. From the moment he was born, his life was going to be an uphill battle because of where he was born.
And his mom had issues, right? Drug issues.
But those issues,
right?
Again, things where and I say victim, but I don't mean it like, oh, what was hers. I mean, she chose what to do. She chose her things.
She chose her life.
But the city itself, the government in that they – and I'm not saying the government is saving people, John. I know you got to look at me. But my point is that there is the resources this city has, they go to line the pockets of friends and neighbors before they go to help and support the people they should.
That's because 90% of most – charity dollars, government programs, whatever you want. We've spent $23 trillion in this country on poverty programs.
But
you know what they've done? All they've done is create a middle class of professionals who administer that.
Yeah. Upper middle class now. I mean, people get wealthy off of that stuff. But that's not my point.
It was the black middle class in Chicago.
That's not what I'm talking about.
For Atlanta now.
That's not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about the government programs that are failing. I'm talking about before that. Those government programs are a Band-Aid on a scab in this city where areas of the city are ignored by politicians because there's nothing in it for them. And I'm talking about getting a business license or helping businesses build here or helping or looking at infrastructure. There are multiple studies that show that there's lead in the water on the south side and lead in the water on the west side.
Making an issue
absolutely
of that for months. No one's listening.
And lead in the water and children, those children always grow up to have problems. Always grow up to have problems. And those problems we have to deal with. And those problems show up in Laquan McDonald's. People who have lives who are completely shattered because, one, they're not getting any benefit of the high rises downtown, and they're not getting any benefit of the tax dollars that are going into the pockets of people like Ed Burke because they're using it. They want their friends to get paid first. And it's not just Burke. I mean, we're talking this is decades
of
this stuff.
Yeah.
And the tragedy, and that's why I say we're playing tiddlywinks in this. It's like, oh, this little microcosm of it, and people are looking at it, and oh, this guy said he was racist. Yeah. No, all that stuff is meaningless when we let people like an Ed Burke, and I keep throwing Ed Burke because he's the name of the week, but Ed Burke and all the...
What about the dailies for God's
all
sake?
All these guys. And they've all used their power to make themselves better and make their friends better, and millions of people have suffered.
Well,
and I'm not talking.
There's a pathology in the city, okay? The pathology of Chicago. Once you, it's like, kind of like the Helsinki effect in a way. We're kind of like victim. You kidnap somebody, you beat them up, and you abuse them until they kiss your hand, right? Yeah. And in a way, that's how we are in the city of Chicago. Because look at what they're doing. They've got Preckwinkle. She's Preckwinkle Daly, Chico. And Mendoza. These are the candidates that are the popular kids.
The opportunists?
They're the popular kids. And there's like stories about, oh, Mendoza's doing well in the polls, blah, 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 blah. It's all BS because that has nothing to do with what you're talking about, which is running the city right. And, the stuff that Scott Wagspack talks about, people like this. People should be looking at not who they think is the most powerful candidate that they could suck up to and kneel by their side so they could get crumbs. They should think of who's the best candidate to run the city.
Yeah.
But they don't.
No.
Because they've been beaten down and they become corrupt as well.
Mm-hmm. And it's in everybody's
life. I feel like if I were the Khan, I would sit on a on a mountain of skulls,
yeah,
and rule from there.
Yeah. And it's not just a pact, you know, poorer people or, you know, people who are just less, you know, minorities and stuff. Hey, look at your streets. I mean, look at every street in this city and how terrible they are. And how
not every street.
Yeah, well, unless,
Esther
yeah.
Street.
Exactly.
Nice.
But look
Michigan
at,
Avenue. Look at it. It's so beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, the streets that get plowed, I mean, all that stuff. But look at that infrastructure in this city. Right. A city that we've been skimping and saving because the less we spend on actually fixing things, the more we can put in our pockets. And that's how it's worked.
These TIFs are really sick.
Yeah, all of it. I mean, it's such a scam. It's such a scam to say, hey, oh, we're going to make the city opening and welcoming to business because business wants to be here if we welcome them.
All business wants to do is to know who they have to pay off.
Exactly.
So they could get, you know, what they want, just like everybody else in this town, in this corrupt town. You know what it's like? It's like I used to call it by another name, Chicago. I used to call it Barter Town. It's like that with like two men enter, one man right. leave. Like who's the Proud Mary, the actress, the singer that sang Proud Mary? Tina Turner.
Yes.
And she's the boss of Barter Town.
Yes, yes.
You know
yes.
what I mean?
Yep.
You come and you make a deal. Can you make a deal? I mean, that's what it is. And in a way, I'm all for like a Hong Kong in the Midwest. And let's have unfettered capitalism and let's make deals and everything. But we're hurting here, man. And we're hurting also, not only by the cynical ones, but what about the ones that that are full of good intentions and their hearts are pure, or so they say. And they tell us that we have to invest. Invest in the neighborhoods. There are candidates who are running. I've listened to them. Jeff, I've been sitting across the way, the table from them for days. They talk, and it really sounds nice. And I hear people I respect, colleagues, others that say, oh, this one sounds interesting, that one sounds interesting. And I'm like, well, I couldn't even understand what the hell she meant. What does she mean? Like Enya, Amar Enya, what is she talking about when she says we have to invest in the, you know, it just sounds nice. It's like a song, like a soothing song. But I don't know what it means, man. So let's be honest about something since we're on the Chicago way, all right? Let me tell you, there are candidates who are running who have no business to be in the race. I'll tell you who they are right now. Jerry Joyce, come on, man. What is that about? Bobby Fioretti, Bob, you're a perennial candidate. Come on. You're not going to win. What are you doing there? Amar Enya, you're not running for mayor. You're running for Danny Davis's seat. He's been a do-nothing mail-it-in congressman all his life. And he was a do-nothing mail-it-in alderman from the West Side. He sounds great, like he's on The Simpsons. He sounds exactly like the guy on
Dr. Herbert.
Dr. Herbert, but he does nothing. The only thing he's done of significance, Danny, is to put a crown of messianic crown on the head of Sun Young Moon, the Moonie. You know that, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know that about him?
No.
Oh, look it up. He actually proclaimed him the Messiah. That's his deal.
What?
Yes. It's not bizarre. But so she's running for that spot to elevate herself. She can't win. Who can run the city? Well, you know, I kind of like Paul Vallis. I do like Paul Vallis. But Lori Lightfoot can run the city.
Mm-hmm.
I think she could run the city well. Vallis could run the city. Those two should have a debate. But these other hacks, I mean, come on. I'm tired of it. Do you understand where we are in the city of Chicago right now? We're at a point where people can actually make a difference. But will they? Or is media and the corrupt politics of a corrupt town aiming us to put in Rahm's favorite candidate, Susana Mendoza, or the anti-Rahm, Tony Preckwinkle? And two horns on the head of the same goat, as far as I'm concerned.
So you're a full editorial board now, huh, John?
Yes, I am. I'm a full member of the editorial board, jacket and tie, sitting there, taking notes, asking questions. I asked Daly and Chico and Preckwinkle whether Pat O'Connor. Alderman Pat O'Connor should be finance chairman.
By Alderman.
Right, with his wife, the billboards, Barbara O'Connor, buy your real estate from her all over the ward. People didn't have much to say. They'd rather talk about kind of Burke, like, oh, Burke shouldn't have done what he did.
How dare he?
Yeah, but they don't want to talk about what's going on now.
Yeah.
It's pathetic.
So you sent me some audio you were capturing, and I really want to share some of this because it's priceless. But my favorite is the first thing you sent me, which is your tour guide for working the editorial board. Our friend of the show, Kristen McQuarrie, who's a workhorse over at the Tribune.
Yeah. We're doing the Chicago Way, just a little teaser for the midweek. So can you do your bell again?
Sure. This is just a typical teacher bell you might have found on a desk, you know, in the 1950s. It sounds like this. And the purpose of this is to get candidates to kind of wrap up, because we have mayoral candidates coming in this week, and some of them are a little long-winded. I can probably guess who's going to get the bell the most, but we'll wait and see if I'm right by the end.
What do we expect out of this? Can I squeeze three columns out of this, or should I just go for the one?
Hey, you Bill. Know, I don't know if you can get three out of this one session, but you can probably get one per day for, you know, definitely, yeah.
Right?
Yes.
They're all here. They open their mouths. They talk.
They're here, and they're just probably going to get deeper questions than they've gotten so far at other forums.
And this is all online, and people can go find it online, right?
Yes. It's streaming live on our Facebook page, but it'll stay live there for a while if they want to go back and watch it.
So how important is this for the campaign?
You know, I think they place a lot of emphasis on it. They will have staff members sitting around them who are recording and trying to catch other candidates making a mistake that they can then use in a television ad or somehow catch them maybe tripping up on something that they've said previously.
I saw that in the governor's race.
Yes, it's been, it's routine. So I think they're nervous in that sense. They've all been coached and messaged. But we really just like them to relax and talk. You know, they're taking a big risk and a lot of personal sacrifice by running for mayor, so this is a chance for them to explain why.
And what are those of us on the other side of the table? Notice I'm sitting on the right side, extreme right of the Tribune editorial board.
I didn't put that together, but that is a perfect spot for you.
What are we supposed to do? So that people understand, like, how this thing works. Those who aren't,
you know,
they think of an editorial board like a, you know, like a, something grand and important and a high ivory tower.
You know, we don't consider ourselves that way. We will make an endorsement in the race based on what we think whoever can move the city forward in the best way. And endorsements are just one tool in the toolbox for voters. They're not make or break. We don't weigh how much money someone has or who's polling. We really just try to pick the best candidate.
Kristen McQuarrie. Yeah, she was good. It was great to be there. I really liked her bell. She only used the bell, I think, once on Paul Vallis.
Oh.
I think it was Paul. But of course,
I'm sure she had Paul in the pool.
Yeah.
I love Paul, but we've talked about that before.
He actually gives answers rather than slogans, and slogans are shorter. I had three moments that I thought were interesting. One was Susana Mendoza lecturing me on whether I'm a sexist or not, but I don't know if I gave you the video or the audio of that. And she's upset because I actually call her out for what she's doing, and she's upset. And I'd be treating you the same way if you were a man. If you were a man and you were hanging with Ed Burke, I'd be writing about that too. So stop that nonsense. Then there was Preckwinkle. Preckwinkle, after she was asked about Ed Burke, I talked to her afterward. How did you do?
But, you know, I think I laid out pretty consistent policy positions. You know, we all had an opportunity to put forward our platform, so that's good.
Those were good. One of the things that I thought you had to do was deal with the Burke thing. Do you think you handled it right?
I think I've answered the questions, and I was pretty satisfied with my answers in the forum.
One thing I've noticed is that some candidates in the race, whenever they say something, it's big news, like reducing the size of the city council. When I remember Rich Daley wanted to do that to have more control over the city council, do you get a sense that like everything that Bill says is a big story?
I focused on my own campaign. Let me just say, I think one of the strengths actually of our city is that aldermen have relatively small districts because everybody knows their aldermen. You know,
right.
And they may the aldermen and the mayor may not know any other elected official, but they know their aldermen and their mayor, and that's a good thing. We should have a close connection to our elected officials.
I'm opposed to the shrinking of the city council because I remember Rich Daley saying he wanted it to control the city.
I don't think
that's right.
Hey, John, I think it would be easier for the mayor to control the city if there were fewer aldermen. You're quite right.
Madam President.
All right.
Finally, she agrees with me on one thing, but she was complaining that everything Bill Daley says is a news story. And then when I asked her, she didn't want to say. But my favorite thing of all, and I referred to it in the last podcast, was the story about my mom and my Uncle George letting a friend of theirs eat goat turds. But it was the Dorothy Brown goat thing. Because, you know what? The FBI was investigating Dorothy Brown's goat meat business. I don't know if they have a case. I think it's like Fisher cut bait, FBI and Justice Department. But at the same time, the answers she gave me suggest to me, as a son of a butcher and a goat man myself, that Dorothy Brown, running for mayor, knows absolutely doodly squat about goats. So why do you think you did?
I think I did excellently. I think I did excellently. I hit the main point. I think that I'm one of the few people in this race that actually have some sound and succinct ideas. You know, versus just a lot of flowery language.
I've got to ask you about the goat thing. What is the goat business?
The Goat Masters Corporation.
Can you explain this?
I can. And so my husband has done a lot of research on goats. Goats, if you look at the research on it, they multiply. Okay.
What about goats now?
If you look at it, my husband has done a lot of research over the last 20 years on goats. And if you look at goats, they actually multiply tremendously. They can produce at least twice a year. I mean, in a 12-month period. So that business was about raising goats and selling them. So you buy a batch, you buy some studs, you know, some
billy goats,
right? And you have female goats, and you actually reproduce. So you do two things: you either sell the goat or you sell the goat meat. So you know, a lot of goat meat is, I guess, from his research, we found that a lot of the goat meat is imported. So not a lot is produced in the United States. So it's eaten by a lot of different ethnic groups. So it's a good business.
Right. Greeks like it?
Yes.
Jamaicans?
Yes. Africans?
Yeah. Well,
and
right.
Indian Americans, because you're talking about halal.
But is this being investigated, the goat meat thing? Is that part of the FBI investigation?
No, well, goat meat business was a part of that initially, and we gave them all the financial records, and they saw that it was a legitimate business. Actually, we had, I think, 26 acres in Georgia.
Did you ever produce a goat from that business?
A lot of goats, yes.
Did you sell them in Chicago?
No. The business was in Atlanta. I mean, not Atlanta, Georgia. And we had 26 acres down
Atlanta
there.
Atlanta is Georgia.
Well,
Atlanta's in Georgia,
but it wasn't in Atlanta.
Oh, okay,
it was outside of Atlanta, and my husband actually had a trailer down there, and he actually, you know, managed that business down there and worked with the farmers down there, and that was his passion.
So it's not being investigated by the FBI.
We gave them all the information, and they were able to. We gave them all the bank statements so they could see that money was used for the goat business.
Okay, so it's not active now.
Not to my knowledge. I mean, they've had
those. It's your business.
What's not active now, John? What do you mean?
Is the goat?
The business is not active. No.
Okay.
It's not active. No.
All right.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Dorothy. Yeah, that's Dorothy Brown, goat purveyor. You know, I don't believe she knows anything about goats. She doesn't like goats. She doesn't eat goats. But I just couldn't believe she was talking like that.
That's great.
Jeff Carlin.
I know.
Billy Goat, lead the hound. The hound goat, barks, Billy Goat, jumps, Land Rover, Tucker, on a And here's a man who I don't think I've ever seen him eat a goat. But let me give you an insight into our next guest. I've known him for 30 years. He's a friend of mine, very dear friend. Our wives are friends. He's in the political world and the brand consulting world. Tom Serafin of Serafin Associates. And in 30 years, Tom Serafin has never, ever pitched me on a story in his life. Is that amazing? Is that a man of ethics or what? Tom, pat yourself on the back, will you please? You're so awesome.
Yeah, I wish I could. My shoulder's killing me this morning, though.
So,
good morning, good afternoon, good evening.
Good afternoon, Tom. What about that goat? Yeah. What about Dorothy Brown and the goats, my friend?
Well, you know, every time you talk about a goat, I keep thinking about the Billy Goat, and you know, and then the situation with Wrigley Field, and of course, I'm a White Sox fan. Always have been a White Sox fan.
Me too.
So I think that goat is being applied to other people, so to speak. Especially after listening to your conversation.
When Dorothy Brown said you got to get some studs and import some studs to breed goats, I just was trying not to. I really literally was biting the edge of my tongue off. I had a chunk of tongue meat swimming around in my mouth from biting it off.
Yes, and as a carnivore, you certainly know what you're talking about.
So what's going on in the Merrill race, Tom Serafin?
Well, there's a rash of polls that have come out recently in the last week, and all of them would suggest that none of the candidates currently in the field are close to getting the required number of votes to be selected. In fact, they're all kind of bunched up when you take a look at the margin of error of 3 or 4 points. I mean, it's really kind of a crowd. I mean, I guess the most newsworthy story with regard to the polling data is that the president of the Cook County Board, Tony Prenquick, has kind of come back to the pack. And the Ed Burke thing and the way they've handled it has probably hurt them to some respect and stunted their growth. In fact, you know, some of the polls would suggest they've lost some support. And, you know, Susana Mendoza is right there near the top. And then the cluster of candidates right underneath, you know, it's interesting, you know, the money is kind of, you know, with Bill Daley, with Chico and Tony and Susana Mendoza, but the people right underneath who don't have the kind of cash that they have, Paul Vallis and others, are right there too. I mean, everybody's within, at this point in the campaign, everybody is within striking distance. I mean, everybody's in the game right there in the top 5 or 6 candidates.
We're talking with Tom Serafin, Serafin Associate, and I still think you're an analyst on Local Fox, right? A political analyst on that Local Fox show?
Yes, I still do the morning show. Good morning, Fox.
Is that the one with Brittany Payton, America's sweetheart?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
She's on the show.
Nice. Such a nice.
Yes.
Let me ask.
A good crew. They do a lot of work in the morning. They you know, they get up early and they really burn it.
Corey McFerrin, is he still in the morning?
Yes. No, he's in the evening now.
Okay,
one of the good guys in the business, and you know, he was a sports guy before he was an anchorman.
Sox fan, big time.
Yeah,
Southsider.
Right.
Speaking of Southsiders and Sox fans, Bill Daly's one. And how'd you like that transition, Jeff?
Very nice.
And I'm still trying to figure out, what are you doing in the race, Bill Daly, unless you want to make sure that it's Susana Mendoza and Tony Preckwinkle? It's almost like he's blocking. Bob Fioretti, all these, Jerry Joyce, for God's sake. They're all in there. They're blocking Paul Vallis, it looks like to me, so that they can have Susana Mendoza versus Tony Preckwinkle and Rahm and all those people. The City Hall, the official City Hall people, are going to be behind Susana, Michael Sachs, J.B. Pritzker, all these things behind the scenes. And then they'll just hand us another mayor like they always do.
You can make a real good case for that based on history here in Chicago and how people have, you know, positioned candidacies to block other candidacies. It certainly appears here that is going on. I mean, it's interesting the trades are with Susana Mendoza and the public employee unions are with Preckwinkle. And
right.
Then you have Daley leading the pack with $1.6 million. And in second place in some of these polls at 11%, which, you know, I think you need 18-20% to win this thing. which is not a big race. You're talking about 100,000 or fewer votes. Anybody could do that if they hit it, and they hit it right. Chico's got 1.3 million, and a lot of people think that Gary got into the race to help block Susana Mendoza. But if you look at his ads and the way he's running, he's running to win. His path is not as clear as Susana's. You know, Susana Mendoza's got that it. You know, in my business,
yeah.
When you have somebody who's got an it or a brand, it takes a lot to diminish the it.
Why is she being beloved by the? Why does the media love her so much? I've listened to her being interviewed, particularly on radio and television. And I've known her for years since she was working for Ray Frias. She was a kid working in Ray Frias' office in the, I think, 12th Ward, you know, when she was coming up with the Burke organization. But the way she's interviewed, it's like amazing. Like, I don't know, does broadcast talent take drink magic fairy potion before she sits down for an interview? Jeff Carlin?
Well, there's some kind of potion there, because you're correct. It's more about the media doing the interviews rather than Susana. Susana is, when you got the it, you know, you can say things and you can make mistakes, but it's that Q factor will carry you through a lot of difficult turf. And she is very attractive, you know, as a candidate. And as an individual, she's charismatic and talking with you. She takes time with people, and she actually looks them in the eye, and she expresses herself. She's good at expressing herself. Whether or not she can run the city of Chicago, those are issues that people debate, and you have to see her in practice. But she runs the comptroller's office pretty well. But more importantly, no matter what she ran for, she would be in the same position she is now. She'd be near the top just because she's got that Q factor. And, you know, the more she gets into this business deeper, she develops more of a record, and then there are more holes to poke at. But right now, she doesn't have that kind of long breadth and record of public service. Not public service, but government service. So it's difficult to kind of to shoot at her. Right now, they're tying her. They had Burke and everybody else. But it's going to be tough to dislodge her, and it's going to cost you more money. Tony Preckwinkle is an easier target because of the way they've handled this Ed Burke thing. Her history as Cook County Board President, as an alderman, she brings to the table a long record of accomplishments, and of course, people along the way that she's had to throw overboard. So, I mean, she's got to deal with both sides of that. And unfortunately for Tony, most people in Illinois, Chicago know her. She's got very high name recognition. So when you take a poll and you know more than 70, 80% of the people in Chicago know who you are, and you're polling 11, 18, 17, 14%, depending on the poll, those are sad numbers. You'd like to be able to do a little better than that. But it shows she's going to have to do a lot of work to get across the finish line.
And I'm going to circle back on that Susana Mendoza thing because, you know, I work in the producing side, so a lot of my seeing candidates and personalities or people who are work who are, you know, wherever they are, mayors, you know, sportscasters, whoever coming in, you can tell the ones who come in and they're very personable, they're very bubbly, they have a, you know, they're there to schmooze and they're really good at it. I mean, it's kind of like Clinton back in the 90s, you know, Slick Willie, they're very smooth, and even in a situation people kind of glom onto them. And Susana is top notch at that. That comes in smiley, very personable. And you can see her build those relationships with the people she's talking to. They automatically are at ease. They feel like she's a friend or a little sister or a cousin or something like that. And it comes off as much more personal. And she's milking the crap out of it.
You would feel much she would be much more personable. You know, look, I like her. I've even written that she'll be mayor someday. But I'm telling you, I don't think she's ready for it now. But here's the thing. There's a video out where she's congratulating Ed Burke on his, you know, he's going for his reelection, and there's supposed to be a video out where she's out there introducing Ed Burke, talking about how great he is. I can't wait for the SEIU to drop that video, you know, because they're working for Tony Preckwinkle.
Tony, yeah.
I'm just wondering where that video is. I'm hearing all about it. Have you heard about it too, Tom?
Well, Susana
Mendoza Burke
couple,
stuff? Yeah.
A couple different videos involved with a couple other candidates as well. So, you know, in this business, especially in this kind of election, timing is everything when you have a big crowded field. So you have to pick a moment where you have that moment for at least 36, 48 hours to get some root. And then it kind of grows after that. I've been looking for that moment in this race where there's a separation or somebody does something that would be unusual in this kind of environment. Bill Daley, you know, we know Bill Daley for a long time. He's done everything, you know, in a counterintuitive kind of way. He's not running in the traditional sense. He's attaching himself to a lot of progressive agenda items. And, you know, I think, you know, he's kind of stepped out a little bit on some of those issues, which has surprised me. You know, of course, he's carrying the weight of his name, just like Tony Preckwinkle.
Yeah.
He's carrying that last name that brings a lot to the table, a lot of weight that you have to carry across the finish line. Susanna doesn't have that. Paul Vallis has got, you know, if he had more money, he could probably be in that first tier, but the first tier and the second tier are only separated by 3 or 4 points. You need 18, 19, 20%, and you're looking at, right now, everybody's bunched between 7 and 11%, 12%. You know, which suggests to me that a lot of voters are saying, show me something. Let's right. see something. And that's not out there right now. They're looking for something. Show me something. Everybody in town, when you get on the bus, you take the L in the Metro, or you talk to guys, you know, when you're having a beer, they all know that Chicago's broke. They wonder who's got a solution to Chicago. They ask me about the elections. Well, who, Tom, is going to solve the problems? And, you know, it hasn't been articulated in a way that the voter really gets it right now or believes that the person who's speaking gets it. That kind of a conversation hasn't yet taken place with the voters here in Chicago.
One thing
I think the first candidate that does that is going to be successful.
One thing you did say is the 36 hours, 48 hours of a story that hits. We're talking opposition research, negative hits, where a reporter writes a story, oh, I just found this under the transom, and I'll call it investigative reporting. But it really is a hit job, and you've seen this. I've only been doing this 30 years, and I can tell the hit jobs when I see them, and they're right. Masked over like, oh, yeah, I really did all this work myself. And I'm sure you did, corroborating all the evidence, but that doesn't mean that the initial drop wasn't made by Oppo. And who's going to get hurt? Because it's all about timing, isn't it? It's about timing.
Yeah, it's all about timing and whether you can respond in time. I was involved in a campaign, you know, years ago where somebody, our opposition, dropped something, you know, on the front page of your Chicago Tribune, and that was on a Wednesday or Thursday. We didn't have, this is before the internet, we didn't have time to respond. We made the effort, but we needed a week and a half. We had 4 days, and then we had a weekend in between. As soon as it hit, I said to myself, I better look for another job, because, you know, the timing is so critical today. And you have to have those war rooms. You have to be able to turn that information around so quickly and respond, but not so much respond to the charge. You have to lay out a counter charge, and that response has to be woven into it. So you need to put the opposition or the accuser on the defensive right away. And that takes some thought and preparation and good staff work. You need good research, and you're absolutely correct. I can show you the scars on my back from the victimless crimes of people dropping dimes on people. So,
isn't it something? Don't you love it when we, in our business, we pretend that it's all really investigative? What do you mean? This wasn't a tip. This was. I've been working on this story for quite some time, 6 months at least.
Yeah. You know, there's not enough staff time, and the people in the world of news gathering are stressed with the deadlines. You just don't have the time to do that kind of research, and unfortunately, that's the name of the game. So you know, when you go to a reporter, you have to take a good, clean file, and you have to give them people to call and check your facts.
Right.
And you know, it's much easier to check the facts than it is to find the facts.
Now in the age of internet, Jeff Carlin and Tom. Seraph, in the age of internet, everybody, any cartoon head with a Twitter account can make a spurless accusation, right? And how do you defend it? How do you defend it, Jeff? What do you do? Go on the Rokon show, say, Ro, save me. Help, let me have my say. Jeff Carlin, put me on Ro.
I don't know. And Tom, you know, we're as this goes, we're about 5 weeks out from the election. What do you see? I mean, you did this. What's the time frame there? What should we? Should we? Is there a window where we should see something and be like, I don't know if I should even follow or even believe that? Is there like a 3-week rule, or what do you advise people to see?
Well, in this particular election, because of what, you know, John raised a real good issue at the beginning of this conversation about the fact that people are there to block other people. At some point around Valentine's Day or a little bit later, people are going to be talking to each other, and some candidates will probably be dropping out. And if you're not dropping out, candidates in, you know, that are on top, that want to cement that position, are talking about other candidacies and to other candidacies, trying to make a deal to whether or not, hey, come and support me. You know, on the 20th, you have a news conference, say, you're throwing all my weight to you. You know, if that's 10,000 votes, that's 10% of what you need to get elected.
Hey,
that's
Amara. Amara Enya, yeah. And Tony Preckwinkle, because Amara's going to be running against, who's the guy from The Simpsons, the doctor again?
Dr. Hibbert.
Dr. Hibbert, yeah. She's going to be running against Dr. Hibbert for the 7th Congressional District, right?
Ooh,
and she'll want, come on, man. This is the Chicago way, Tom Serafin. We're not sitting at Gene and Giorgetti's talking this out over a slice of veal.
Mm-hmm,
come on, don't you? You can see her. I mean, speculate. You can see Amara going for the...
Yes, right? She reminds me of the Ortiz. I mean, I listened to her the other day in an interview.
Ocasio.
She talks fast. She's certain. And she, I was impressed with her conversation. Now, I don't agree with her issues, but some of them I do. But, I mean, her ability to, you know, speak to the issue and move on beyond the conversation and take the interviewer to another spot, I was impressed with her ability to do that. And I thought to myself, well, she's not stopping here. Win, lose, or draw. There's other places for her. And you just pointed out where she may be probably going.
Now, Gary Chico, here's another one. I've known him for years. We're friendly. I like
him. Good guy.
But, you know, I don't know if he's running for mayor or is he running so that Gary Chico protects his position with the others who may become mayor. Right? I mean, like,
Gary might have gotten into this race for a lot of other reasons than winning. But I think he's in that mode now where he enjoys campaigning. He's out there, and he's campaigning with some sense of, you know, optimism and aggression. He's out there, actually. His path to a victory is more problematic than the other candidates in the top five, top six, because the constituencies have to move. You know, I'm uncertain about where his base may be, but I like what he's doing, and he's been doing it aggressively. I think he got into it at one point to help make sure that Tony Preckwinkle had a better route to victory. But I think that's gone now, and now he's in this race, and I think he's mixing it up at the debates, and I think I've been impressed with what he's been saying. But his route to victory is more problematic than it is for Susana Mendoza or Tony or Bill Daley right now.
I've noticed that in the Sun Times, which I used to call the Rom Times for a while. I don't know what to call it now.
Mm-hmm.
They've had a few stories condemning Paul Vallis for having social media penetration in key demographics. It's almost like the stories are like, come on, quit sending me all these texts, Paul Vallis. How can you get Paul Vallis to stop sending you texts? But it's really, I mean, clearly some editors or political people there have decided
that. Yeah, well, that reminds me of that old joke about the old, you know, FBI giving parking tickets to a mafia convention. You know, there's a lot more serious things going on there.
Well,
so Paul Vallis, you know, anything to slow down some of his conversation. In if you look at the numbers, what he's been able to raise and where he is in the polling data, he's probably come the farthest with the least amount of resources, and he's still positioned in that second tier, a few points behind, and with the margin of error, nobody knows. I mean, this is a race that's really hard to figure, and even the pros in town will tell you that. This is, you know, he's still in the game. He could have one of those moments like Reagan had with George Bush when he said, this is my microphone, I paid for it at the debate, which, you know, separated him from George Bush at the time. That's the moment everybody's looking for. Who's going to have that moment? Paul Vallis has got the personality for that moment, but you have to be able to strike when it's hot, and you know that hasn't happened yet.
We're going to have to pick this conversation up at Gene and Giorgetti. We have to do like a regular Monday afternoon, okay? And you know what? Yeah, in the Chicago way tradition, we should probably rent the room and then charge everybody $1,000 who want to sit around and hear us talk. But I don't think that would be a fun conversation. It wouldn't be ethically correct. You know, I don't think the Tribune would like it because I could probably get politicians to pay $10,000 a piece.
Right.
Know? I mean, if you.
And let me say one thing before you, you know, I hit for the exit door. You know, you opened the conversation about our friendship.
Yes.
And you're right about that. Our kids, you know, went to preschool together.
Right.
Your two boys, exceptional young men. And I was sure glad that they were thinking and on their feet, you know, around Christmas time. So bless you, you know, bless your health and your family's health and your whole family. So that's more important than anything. You and Jeff, take care, guys.
Thanks, Tom.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Tom. That was a good conversation, Jeff Carlin. I enjoyed it, especially the part where Tom said the pros in town don't even know. And we're looking at each, I'm looking at you saying, we are the pros, damn it. All right, so we'll wrap it up now. I just want to say again, okay, this is the race for mayor of Chicago is the main event. You're here on the Chicago Way because you know that you're going to get exactly what's going on. And other people listen to it, and then they spin off their stories. Okay? I can tell. I can even see my words showing up in promos of other people's work. It's just the way it goes. I understand it. Jeff understands it. But you want to get to the original source? I'm not kissing my own butt. I'm not. This is the original source. This is the Chicago Way. On WGN Plus. See you next time, everybody.